This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And checking in with Charlie, yours truly, the
good morning
sous chef of the garden, Frank
Franklin
Proctor.
Proctor. And look, sitting beside you,
I know,
very special guest here in the studio, live from Liberty Village. We have Paul DeGroot.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Wearing a hat today because he banged his noggin on a sprinkler system, right? Well, 6'2", you got to learn to stoop over a little bit.
Yeah, I think I would learn these things after a while.
But I don't think I've ever seen Paul really without a hat. He is
really?
Hat kind of a guy.
There is that. Yes.
Yeah.
But it's a good excuse, right? When you're bleeding, you just cover it with a hat, and you would do that.
Now, I heard you just kind of interviewing Paul prior to the show.
Yes.
A little background stuff. We'll get to that in a moment. But I have to do my job here,
yes,
getting
the
phone numbers on the air. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I get you-know-what from Charlie. Mm-hmm. Okay. Here are the numbers to call. In Toronto, call 416-360-0740. Then anywhere else in the province, toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. If you're a first-time caller, please let Sebastian know, and he'll pass that message along to me. And when you get the air, you're going to get the old
wings,
yes.
Your garden wings.
And, oh, our mantra, I should just fly that in here. Call early, call often, one question per call, and, that'll be about it.
Okay. Just a couple of, you know, as is my wont.
Oh, yes.
Things that are happening in the world of horticulture, because spring is in the air. I mean, look at this upcoming week. The forecast is phenomenal. Sunshine, double digits, like, hello. Mm-hmm. Bathing suit out there. Let's get the
Speedo,
weeds.
Wild, yeah.
Well, everybody's been south, right? So they've got these suntans they're working on. It's an opportunity to keep that tan. I haven't been south, I would like to point out, but nevertheless. So again, a big welcome to Paul DeGroot, joining us today from NVK Nurseries, located in Waterdown, Ontario. Paul knows lots and lots and lots about trees. Well, about lots of things, but particularly trees are his love, I believe. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. And so he knows how to grow them, for the best success. So questions about pruning, how to choose a tree, how to transplant a tree, or just when to water and fertilize trees. If you've got anything like that burning in the back of your brain, call today and Paul will tune you into how he would do it. What were you just going to say?
It's pretty hard to tell somebody how to plant a tree. You pretty much got to show them how to plant a tree.
Well,
but we can do our best.
Your challenge today, because you are a do-it kind of a guy. I know this. I know you quite well. And the speaking the words, the getting the visuals going can be challenging, but that's going to be what you do. And you do a great job, and I will buy you breakfast.
When I was this is special. You are being favored. I was just going to say, this time of year, as we're coming into spring or close to, good time to get out there and, speaking of trees, kind of get some of the bad wood out, you know, trim those trees.
Bad wood, I like that. That's a good horticultural
bad word. Bad wood. Bad wood. But, you know, any of the broken branches, whatever, time to...
Dead, diseased, and damaged.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
This can be a good time
taken out any time. Yep. Absolutely. Oh, Frank, you're so on it.
Oh,
10 years we've been doing this show, and finally, look at what he's learned.
And he's finally learning something about
trees.
Yes,
exactly.
I know. It's an amazing thing. He's come a really long ways. Considering he killed artificial plants before he met me.
True.
Now he's like, he knows stuff. So listen, if you're in the Hamilton-Burlington area this weekend, there's lots going on at the Royal Botanical Gardens. Double feature. They've got the Frogs show going on, which is very cool. That's still happening in the RBG Center. But the annual Orchid show is happening as well this weekend. We went to the one in Toronto a couple of weeks ago. Oh, well, you were away. I went with Sean James. Sean was here filling in for you. So Sean and I went to the orchid show. You and I went a couple of years ago
at
the Toronto Botanical. So it's a great way to just cheer yourself up. It's so pretty. Beautiful exhibits. So for more information about times and, you know, admission prices, et cetera, go to www.rbg.ca. And I just need to mention the Ageless Gardens series is ongoing. So this Monday, 9 p.m., Vision TV. I believe we're up to episode 4, and there are 5 episodes in total. The episode 4 is one that I'm in, so if you haven't watched any of them, make sure you watch this coming Monday. It's all about growing community. So a quote from... actually, where's this quote from? Bottom line is, here's a quote. A group of community gardeners campaigned to change City Boulevard gardening laws. So this is part of what the show is about. A radio host, that's me, keeps a virtual community of gardeners together over the airwaves. And recent immigrants and refugees seek engagement with others in their new community. So 9 o'clock this Monday. Why not check it out? I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Hey, good stuff. Yeah. All righty. We have to bump up against our first break here, but we shall return in moments. Just let me emphasize, lines are completely open right now.
Wow. Yeah. Nobody wants to talk to us today.
What's going on here? So a reminder of those phone numbers. We'd love for you to call 416-360-0740 in the Toronto area and anywhere in the province, toll free 1-866-740-4740. Paul, Charlie, and yours truly, Frankie. We'll return in moments.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie and Paul, let's take a little trip out to Empire Corners around the Cayuga area.
I love that name.
There's Werner on the line. Good morning, Werner. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Beautiful day out there, actually.
Oh, good.
I have a question. I have 5 years ago, I got a was given a, you know, just your little pot of amaryllis in the kit that came from, you know, the grocery store. This year I have a bulb. Do I water it? What do I do now? So I want to make sure it blooms and doesn't die on me.
So it's just been a dormant bulb since how long ago?
Last fall.
Oh, okay. So... you know what? In a sense, I'm the wrong person to ask because every time I've ever tried to rebloom an amaryllis, I just get a lot of leaves. But theoretically, that dormant bulb, if you bring it into some sunshine and you water it once, should pop a flower bud out the top anytime now. And once it's been fast asleep for a good 10, 12 weeks, you're good to go. It should produce a flower first, followed by leaves. But I'm the queen of leaves when it comes to amaryllis.
Well, I've had leaves, and it does have 3 leaves growing and then one big stem with a bulb on it.
Oh, so that's your flower bud coming, by the sounds of it.
Yes.
So do I water it?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Make sure it's in sunshine. Don't let it rot from too much sitting in water.
Right.
But definitely. Water thoroughly. Let it drain thoroughly. Keep it in the sunshine. Water as required. That might be every few days. Might be once a week. Just depends how big your pot is and how much soil is in it.
Yeah, it's not very big, and I've just left it compact because I thought I had heard you say... don't give them a lot of space.
That's right. No, they like to be pot bound. They like to be quite tight in the pot. So that's great. So, you know, use your finger, feel the soil, but definitely you've got to support that growth and you've got to provide the water to do that.
Ooh, I'm excited. All right. Thanks very much, Charlie.
Thank you.
I want to report back on that, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
I'll let you know what color it is if it comes out.
All right, and then you can be the expert on amaryllis for all the calls that we get.
Thank you very
much
for calling.
Thanks.
All righty. Delightful to welcome you in from Empire Corners. Hey, this is an international show, you know.
Yes, it is.
We've got listeners south of the border,
all over the world.
Too. All over the world, yeah.
Yes, we do.
There's Emmy in Eaton, New York. Good morning, Emmy. Welcome to the show.
Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
I have a composting question. I've got a nice compost bin, and I'm wondering about putting in pistachio shells, cherry pits, avocado pits. Will they ever break down?
Absolutely, eventually.
eventually.
Yeah. And if you're really unlucky, the avocado might grow.
Yeah, they could grow, exactly. I've had mango seeds, pits grow in my compost before many times, and avocados as well. But no, it's all good. You want to add in all kinds of what we call the browns and the greens. So your pits and shells act like browns, and your banana peels and coffee grounds act like greens, the wet versus the dry. So it's all good. Add it in there and mix it up, and it'll slowly but surely break down.
Oh, great. Yeah, I've been putting in everything else, but I just was concerned eventually I'll have a bunch of rocks in my garden that maybe they wouldn't break down. And I love composting. It really cuts down on the trash. I think it should be mandatory.
That's great. Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Where exactly is Eaton, New York?
Oh, south of Buffalo.
Just south of Buffalo. Okay, that's great.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for popping by across the border to join us.
Before you go, are you still there?
Yes.
Do you have, where you live, what we have in the last few years, which is what we call the green bin program? So our organic waste is taken away by our municipality. Do you have that where you live?
I haven't heard of it, but I would like to have it.
Okay. So here, a lot of people stopped home composting because they realized they could just send their eggshells and coffee grounds off to the municipal sort of composting facility, and then they just get it off the property that way. But it can come back to you because you can go pick up free compost.
Oh,
they'll
really?
They'll usually have an open house at least once a year where it's help yourself and get it back.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's a great idea. But I thought even an apartment complex, one tiny bin doesn't take up much space, and it certainly cuts down on...
It does. Yeah, it's all going into the landfill, and you don't want that. That's
exactly.
Not good.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you for joining us.
Call.
Amy, come on back anytime, okay? All right. We're going to take a little bit of a break here and come back and be joined on the show by another caller, Mary Jane by name, actually.
Well,
and
I still want Paul to tell us a bit about his background, too.
Let's come back and get Paul DeGroote in action here. About time, someone
what
said.
What if I don't want to talk about that?
No, too right. bad. You're going to have to. It'll be dead air if you won't.
A reminder of those phone numbers just before I take a break. 416-360-0740 in Toronto. Anywhere else, toll free. 1-866-740-4740. Back in a moment.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And our special guest this morning, Paul DeGroote, a little background is needed here, I think, Charlie.
I think so, too. And when Paul came into the studio with me, I said, so, Paul, like, whatever got you into this business? And what did you say?
I was born and raised beside a nursery that was owned, a garden center that was owned by my father, and who has since passed on, but my brothers still run it.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
And that's called DeGroote.
Oh, DeGroote's Nursery in Sarnia.
Right.
Pretty much every waking hour, if I wasn't doing homework, I was working at the nursery just because it was expected.
Yeah.
As a family business, mm-hmm. you did everything you could to
support it. You had no option when you're a kid, too, right? Yeah. You get told. So
and
I can't believe you stayed. Yeah.
After high school, I worked in a plumbing retail store for a year. Then I went to college just to see what other interests I had because I was really, really, really sick of gardening. At least I thought I was. And I took philosophy and I took psychology and I took sociology and I loved it for about a year and a half. And when I realized this pencil pushing job wasn't going to be for me, I through a series of funny events, I took a different way home once and saw this place called Connor Nurseries.
I think this is so funny.
And applied for a job. And that was a few years ago.
And that was 34 years ago.
That is correct.
All right. Have they given you the gold watch or is that you got to be the
I'm wearing it.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, really?
They're pretty traditional, eh?
Very nice.
That's very nice. When did you get that on your 25th anniversary?
They actually gave it to me on my 27th.
Oh, okay. They had to order it special.
That's right.
Took two years to get it in.
Paul has a raft of information about trees. I'm going to bring up one little thing, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
I found it really fascinating. I said to Paul, years ago when I owned 15 and a half acres up around Goodwood, that's in the Stovall area, I thought, I'm going to plant black walnut trees. And then, 40 years later, boy, I'm a rich guy. I didn't do it, but if I had, and Paul surprised me by saying, no, you know what? I don't like black. Explain why you don't like black walnut.
In general, I don't like black walnut. Yes, they're a native plant, and I am fully on native plants, native trees.
Yeah.
But black walnut and a few other cousins, other kinds of walnuts, European walnut, emit poison from their roots and, I believe, from the stems, the leaflets, the leaves, the seeds
as
that fall.
When they fall and decompose.
When they fall on the ground, yeah. And that limits the kinds of plants that you can grow under a walnut.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I have a list in my back pocket of plants that will tolerate that poison. That poison is called Juglone. But, yeah, I don't like black walnuts.
Isn't that wild, see?
Yeah, and you didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that. And good thing I didn't follow through with my original plan then.
And I was just teaching my students on Thursday about that, actually.
Well, how about that?
Now, some... very knowledgeable tree gentleman that I am acquainted with told me once that you can add up to 8 inches of topsoil on top of a black walnut root area, and you can plant almost anything in that because it takes a long time before the
Juglone moves up.
Before the poison comes up.
Yeah.
Wow.
That sounds kind of counterintuitive to be able to add that much soil over top.
It doesn't sound like it's... safe, healthy for any tree.
That's right.
To be added.
That's the tree roots are where they are for a reason. They are wanting to be exposed to the air and not covered with 8 more inches of soil. Yeah. Well, I guess a little stress sometimes is a good thing. Yeah.
Speaking of stress, maybe somebody on the line going, are they ever coming to me? Yes,
Mary Jane
in Milton. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Good morning.
Charlie, I gather my zinnia seeds each year. And I've had good luck with them. But this year I gathered them, dried them, but left them out in the garage. Now, with this frost and cold weather, I'm wondering if they will germinate this year.
I'd certainly try.
Well, I wanted to give some to my friends, and I sort of hesitate. But I have lots left, so I'll give them a go.
But you can do like a little germination test just with, say, 10 seeds, a moist paper towel, right there on the kitchen counter. Just get a little petri dish. Just get a little saucer out. Moisten a paper towel. Drop 10 seeds. Fold the towel over. Lay a plastic bag or a piece of saran wrap loosely over top. And let it just sit there. Check 24 hours later. Carefully open up your paper towel. Look for the seed coat having broken. If nothing happens, close it back up, wait another 24 hours. Usual germination time on zinnias, I think, is about 7 to 10 days, and you'll know because you've grown them. And so give them that time frame and keep that paper towel moist, not underwater, of course, but moist. And just at some point, once you've got to, say, the two-week point and nothing's grown, you're at 0% germination, then you'll say, I might have to buy some zinnia seeds this year.
Right.
But you can just work out your percentage germination by putting a counted number of seeds onto the paper towel.
I will try that, and I thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Great. Have a great day, and thanks for joining us.
That's high-tech seed, germination testing.
There you go.
Yeah, viability.
There's Ken in St. Catharines waiting to fly through some comments. Hey, good morning, Ken.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I'd like to know about the geraniums. I'd like to start some geraniums in under fluorescent lights. Is it too late to start?
Too late to start seeds, yep. I mean, you can start them, but they won't flower till maybe July or August. You want to get geranium seeds in the ground.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Geranium seeds must be planted at Christmas time.
At Christmas?
Yep, or early, or first week of January, in order to have flowers in June.
Oh, so too late.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, then, thank you.
Or find a friend who happens to have one in their living room that's already going.
Cuttings.
And steal the cuttings.
Yeah, yeah. It is the time of year to take cuttings off of anybody who's overwintering geraniums, which many people do. They do love their geraniums. So that's a thought as well. Okay, thanks for your call, Ken.
Okay. On we go
Look at that question about black walnut coming up.
Uh-oh. Really?
Okay. You started
we'll get
something.
To that moments. Zoe is first on the line, do believe.
Yep.
Good morning, Zoe. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What's going on?
I'd like to know if these evergreens, they were the emerald evergreens, we transplanted them, about 10 of them last year. Early, they look beautiful all along. They're tall, though. They're about 6 feet more. But now, 2 weeks ago, they all start going brown. just 2 weeks ago.
Emerald
cedars.
So I'm
wondering whether this funny weather did that, or is there a chance they're all going to come around again?
Can you tell us when you planted them? What month?
We transplanted. Early summer last year.
So you had them on the property, and then you moved them to a different location?
Right.
And you had them for a number of years at that time?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And early summer, given that we had such a wet summer, what do you think, Paul?
It would have been a perfect time to move them.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we really watered them. Like, we had the sprinkler on, every day for a few hours.
Oh, for how long? The rest of the summer?
Like, yeah.
Oh, you might have overwatered them.
Yes.
Oh.
In general, cedars do like a fair bit of water, but that sounds like you might have given them too much, and they didn't even stop growing at the end of the summer, the fall.
Oh.
And then when the winter hit, they...
Tender growth could have gotten frosted off.
Right.
Emerald cedar... Sorry, go ahead.
It's not just the tips. It's like, it looks like some of them are pretty solid. They're not quite dried out and dead looking, but they're brown.
Yeah, no, they turn
brown. Do they come around when they're brown like that, or is that it?
Well, the brown will stay brown. The question is, will new green grow in its place? Quick question: do you notice that any particular side of the cedars are brown? Like, is it the south side or the west side? Is that obvious?
Well, I didn't go because it's standing beside a fence, so I don't know what the back looks like. Mm. But the front is facing south.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, can I say add something else?
Yeah.
You know what? They're in the shade a little bit, like a lot in the shade.
They'll tolerate some shade.
Had they been in some shade before you transplanted them?
No. They were in 100% sun.
Okay, so that might have been what happened to you. You know what? All is not lost. I would hold on. Remember that when a plant grows, whether it grows in sun or shade, the leaves that grow are designed for that light exposure. So they're able to photosynthesize because they've grown to cope in that environment. We move a plant into a different, very different light exposure, suddenly those leaves aren't able to survive and do the photosynthesis they were built to do. So those leaves will die. And if a plant is healthy, new ones will grow. So
when you say the plant's healthy, you mean these brown things might die off, and the stalk and the twigs?
Yeah. So what you may find is, like, I wouldn't panic. Wait till we get another couple of weeks, even a month or more into spring. You're going to go out there at some point, put your gloves on, and you're going to comb the cedars. So you're going to stick your fingers in between all those branches, and you're going to comb in an upward motion. The dead stuff's going to fall off when you do that. And if there's new growth, you will at that point be able to start seeing little bits of green starting to grow on what will then be naked stems.
Okay.
You may want to do some cutting back of the very dead, clearly shriveled up wood on the plant. But if it's not shriveled up and dead, let it be and keep an eye on it. And if it survived, you'll know February, March, April. You'll know in the next 3 months, one way or the other, whether they're alive or dead.
All righty.
Okay.
It's a lot of work.
Now aren't you sorry you called?
Well, the transplanting was a lot of work too, I imagine, which is always frustrating with emerald cedars.
Thanks for joining us, Zoe. And boy, the black walnut.
You started something.
I did. Siva in Toronto is online with us right now with a question, I do believe, about that. Good morning, Siva.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
I want to know, when the nut falls off the tree and the outside is green, I want to know if that's poisonous.
I'm afraid I don't know that much.
Sorry?
Sorry, say that again. When what falls off the tree?
The black walnuts.
Yeah,
Sometimes the fruit comes down and it's green on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
It's the nut itself.
Yep.
Is that poisonous?
Well, in the sense that it contains the chemical that makes it an unfriendly environment to other plants, yes. All parts of the black walnut carry.
So if you were going to crack it to eat it, you shouldn't then?
Oh, well, that's a whole different world. Have you ever, Paul, ever harvested walnuts here in Ontario?
No, because I heard they're very nutritious, but they're supposed to be black. So sometimes you see them, and they're green when they fall off the tree.
Okay, that is the outer shell, the husk.
Yeah.
That needs to be cut open. You can watch the squirrels do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the seeds, the actual good part of the seed is inside that. There should be two seeds per big green husk.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever harvested them and roasted them?
Have I ever tried? No.
No, I understood the nuts are very good. Yeah, so I usually pick them up, but they're green, and I was always worried as to whether it might be poisonous. So.
Well, okay, so the whole thing is it's a lot of work. I've never done it, but everything I've ever heard about harvesting and roasting black walnuts, and they were our first settlers, Europeans, that came to Canada. This was a very important source of food, but it is a ton of work to get through. You got to get that green husk off. There's a shell beneath that. You got to get out your hammer, bang that open, inside is going to be a raw walnut.
Yeah, okay. I've seen it done. I just wanted to know if the green outside was possible. Poisonous, and
not,
I should be careful.
Like really, really poisonous to a person?
No, it's not.
No.
Just detrimental to other plants around.
But there's going to be an optimal time to harvest. So when they're green and they fall, is it because they are mature, or is that because squirrels have been chewing on them and dropped them down on your head? Like, is it? So that I'd have to check. I'm not absolutely positive what it should look like for perfect maturity of the nut. So I can let you know about that one, Steve. I can look that up.
Okay, all right. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. You are listening to The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio, AM 740, and, of course, in downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM. As we broadcast live and direct from the Zoomerplex in Liberty Village, we have to take a little bit of a break here, but another walnut, black walnut question coming up in just moments here on the show. Back in a moment.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And this morning, we're pleased to welcome Paul DeGroote as a special guest. He's an expert in anything to do with trees.
Don't.
He knows a lot.
I'm overselling him.
Okay. But wait. Let's just go back to Siva's question about the walnuts.
All right.
So it appears that walnuts ripen. You get good harvests every couple of years, not every year. And that makes sense. That's true with all the fruit trees. Yep. So you get these nuts. When they naturally fall from the tree is when they are mature. And at that point, it's the removing of that green husk that starts the process of either roasting to eat or stratifying to save and plant. So that's the process. And so, yes, indeed, they are certainly perfectly fine to eat. You wouldn't eat the green husk, but you got to get it off. And good luck with that.
Yes.
Because there's some great suggestions for, you know, put them in a cement mixer with a bunch of gravel and roll them around, and then the husks will fall off. So, yes, indeed, good luck with that.
All right. Margaret from Cambridge going to join us now. Hi, Margaret.
Hi.
Morning.
Good morning. I'm calling regarding a black walnut tree that is on the other side of our fence on a hill. So I'm getting everything on my flower beds that is on our side of the fence.
And it's your neighbor's tree, I guess.
Well, it's not. I've been cutting branches off it and everything. But it is almost impossible to pick the seeds and the leaves and those branches. Is it okay to leave that on the flower bed, or is it, because I know it's poisonous.
Well, what kind of flowers are you growing, and how well do they grow?
I'm all kinds of stuff, like mostly bushes, and I've got blueberries, and, you know, like all kinds of...
And things are healthy and happy and grow quite well?
There's a couple of them that are not, so I don't know if it's one that the black... walnut is bothering or not.
Likely. So. If your soil is reasonably good and some things are thriving and some things are not, it is likely that the non-thriving plants are susceptible and sensitive to the black walnut's exudate, which is from the roots, an actual chemical that it just sets up a very unfriendly environment. So you're saying so much debris comes out of this tree, it's a challenge to keep the soil surface clear and clean.
Yeah. Spring, summer, and fall, and then plus these walnuts that the squirrels are eating on the fence.
Yeah, I know. They drop stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think? I mean, what do you think, Paul?
There's not much.
I mean, if it's just so much debris and Margaret's plants are growing reasonably well, then they're fine. They're obviously tolerant of what's going on and what's coming from that tree. So to not worry too much about good garden hygiene when it comes to picking up all that stuff.
But I've been picking that stuff, and it's really time-consuming.
Yeah. Well, I'd say if your plants are doing okay, you know, your gardens beneath or close to that tree are doing reasonably well, and just, you know, you are picking up, as you say. If you stopped picking up, would they suddenly start to deteriorate? I don't think so. I think you'd find that the environment beneath the soil is exactly the same, and if they're coping now, they'll continue to cope.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, so save yourself some time and effort. Put up a hammock, relax, pour a martini, enjoy the garden.
There you go.
Enjoy the squirrels digging at holes in there everywhere to hide these nuts.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thanks, Margaret.
Let's go to Hamilton right now.
Sure,
there's Barbara waiting to have a word here. Hi, Barbara.
And look, she wants to talk about black walnuts.
Yes,
good morning, Barbara.
Hello, Charlie and Frank. How are you today?
Great. Excellent. Thank you.
Oh, that's good. Well, I have two questions, and I have to think which one is priority.
That's
okay,
right.
Yeah.
And I really don't know which one is, but this year I want to plant, so I'll hope that maybe I can get an answer to the other one another time.
Okay.
But I want to plant flowers around my walnut tree. It's in the front yard. Mm-hmm. It was planted for the squirrels by my dad.
Nice.
And they love it. And it's neat to watch them collect them, and they come up on my front little ledge where my porch is, and they'll sit there and they'll crack them open, and they use that ledge as the table. And it's a mess to clean up. It's a chore, but now that I'm retired, I can do it.
That's great.
And last year, I must have had 2,000 walnuts from them.
Wow.
And, I did have over 2,000 because I have to pick them up.
You counted them.
In a different way than most people because I have mobility issues. So I have to use my reacher to pick them up, the ones that squirrels don't get, and to keep the yard clean and be able to cut the lawn. But I want to know what kind of flowers I would plant around this walnut tree.
Paul, do you have any suggestions?
I happen to have a list in front of me.
Okay.
In general, native plants are more tolerant to that poison, to juglone.
So flowering...
I'm talking...
I like color.
Golden ninebark, ninebark in general. So that's a bush that'll have...
Flowers in the spring.
Flowers in the spring. Various colors are available. They come in purple-leafed ones, green-leafed ones, yellow-leafed ones.
She likes color.
Now,
she
I don't think
flowers.
I have room for bushes.
Right. No, bushes.
It would have to probably be flowers.
Native perennials. That
perennials?
Well, perennials are herbaceous as opposed to shrubs, so they're smaller plants.
Right.
You know, do you have access to the internet at all, Barbara?
No, I don't.
Okay. Or do you have any children or grandchildren who can access for you?
I'm sorry. I just...
You know
no,
why?
I don't.
The University of Guelph, if you just Google or if anybody's listening and wants to try this, University of Guelph does have a plants that are tolerant to growing near black walnuts list on their website.
Because okay, that, well,
you can always go to the
I'll
library.
Be in Toronto in a week or so, and maybe I'll know somebody there who has access.
Yes, okay. And you know what I was thinking, Paul? I know that a bunch of the ornamental grasses are quite good beneath walnuts, but again, not super colorful. They're beautiful in their own way, but they're not traditional flowers.
Not like petunias and marigolds.
No.
The list that I have in front of me is all woody plants a couple of vines, but does not extend to
flowers.
Annuals.
Okay, well, leave that with me. I might be able to just come up with a couple before the end of the show. You never know.
Okay.
Thanks
Thank
for
you,
your
Barbara.
Call, Barbara.
All righty. We're just bumping up to our next break. Let's do that. Let's take a little break here and then come back. Nancy in Hagersville hanging on the line there. We'll get to you very shortly here on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Charlie, before we take a hike to Hagersville, you had a comment you wanted to add in here.
Just a quick report back. Barbara, I'm sure you're still listening. Grab your pencil, write this down. There are some perennial plants that seem to be tolerant to grow beneath black walnuts. For early spring blooms, consider irises. Heucora. I'm a big fan of heucora. Also, coral bells. Summer blooms, of course, the daylilies are wonderful. They bloom on and off all summer, as long as there's some sunshine. We've got peonies in the spring. Should be able to bloom well. Mm-hmm. Again, it's going to be sun dependent. And then we've got garden phlox. Everybody loves garden phlox. Blooms late in the summer. And Shasta daisies. So there's, you know, five or six spring, summer color for your garden beneath your black walnut.
Right, you are. Well, Nancy in Hagersville, time for you to jump on the airwaves here. Hi, good morning. Hello.
Yes,
hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah. I have an English walnut.
Mm-hmm. I'm impressed.
I actually have two English walnut trees.
Did you bring walnut seeds from England?
No.
Oh, no.
No, we bought them at a nursery.
Ah. Yeah, they are available here. Yeah.
They are?
Yeah.
Are they very hard to produce? Like, about 4 years ago, they stopped producing.
Oh.
But this past year, they started again, and I don't know why.
Yeah, it's not exactly every other year that they will produce. They will produce poorly for 2 years in a row, 3 years in a row, sometimes 4 years in a row, and then all of a sudden, whoosh, you'll get one really good crop the next year.
Yeah, that's true with all the fruit trees. It's a ton of energy is required to produce all those seeds.
I thought maybe we had a lot more rain last season. It's maybe that helped them. I don't know.
No, it's based on the season before. You'd be surprised. Yes. Trees are very slow moving, old critters, right? They're not like an instant response to the environment. When a tree is dying, it takes years and years to die usually. And when they're going to produce, it's a long process of building up the energy reserves to do so. And then all of a sudden, you'll get a bumper crop 1 year, and then you're back down to virtually nothing for sometimes a number of years, again, depending on the environment.
Right.
So
I know my one older tree, it almost looked like it was dying. I was cutting off some of the branches because it seemed like they were getting disease in them or something.
Possible.
I don't know what affects English walnuts or...
Not much, but things do. I mean, and particularly so often with trees, it'll start with one little bit of damage, which then becomes a much bigger problem as insects are attracted to that damage, enter the plant, carrying viruses and bacteria on their bodies, thus making what was a small problem a bigger problem. So if in doubt about trees, particularly valuable trees, remember you've got the International Society of Arboriculture. Check them out. Find an arborist, a certified arborist in your neighborhood, and get them onto the property to give you some advice.
Okay, Nancy, thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you.
We have a first-time caller on the line. I'm delighted because Paul came in and said, oh, there's the first-time bell.
Maybe Paul wants to ring it.
Well, here.
But I'm pretty sure
it's pretty special. There you go.
There we go. That's for Ray in Toronto. Good morning, Ray.
Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for the welcome. I have a problem with my wisteria. Mm-hmm. It doesn't want to bloom.
When did you plant it?
I bought the home about 15 years ago, mm-hmm. and it was in the soil then. Uh-huh. I built a pergola to drape the branches over it, mm-hmm. and the first and second year it bloomed beautifully. And then after that it's all in leafy, mm-hmm. right through the summer, which I prune and prune and prune.
Oh, good.
And
yeah, you do.
Nothing happens.
Oh, wisteria are very specific on their pruning. I sigh because that's one of the most common issues with wisteria is getting it to bloom. Now, it has bloomed. That's good. That's very good. The challenge is to get it to continue to bloom.
And when you prune, are you pruning off potential buds for next spring, for next season?
Yeah.
That's another tough question.
Yes, I prune in the summer, and I've gone on the internet and just leave three buds and then prune above that.
Oh, wow.
And that's what I try to do.
Tell me about fertilizer. Do you fertilize it at all?
I fertilized with the sheep manure. I didn't know if it was the right type.
Okay, have you done that the last couple of years in the spring?
In the spring, yes.
Okay, so always, always great to incorporate organic matter into soil of any of your gardens, any of your plants. Never a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But sheep manure, any of the manures, animal manures, tend to be high in nitrogen. Mm-hmm. And nitrogen encourages leaves and shoots and stems as part of what it does when it's feeding the plants. Mm-hmm. So it may be that you've got a very, very happy, healthy wisteria growing an awful lot of green growth because mm-hmm. of the sheep manure. So my impulse would be to say, don't do any top dressing, don't do any fertilizing whatsoever this coming growing season. Just let it be. Mm-hmm. Follow those instructions, those pruning instructions. Were they Ontario or at least Canadian pruning instructions, or was it an American site you were looking at? Because there is a Canadian Gardening Magazine, which I don't even know if it still exists anymore. They as far as I know, it's still on the web. It was a good magazine, very, very local information, tips and techniques were super Canadian. They did about a 5-page spread on how to prune wisteria, and it is on the web. And it's excellent. It's got little photographs, it's got descriptions, tells you every step of the way what month to do what. And you're right, when you're talking about July, midsummer, there is a typical pruning that we do in Ontario, and that's that taking back all those long green shoots to the three buds that you mentioned. And that does sound right. So for now, I'd avoid the fertilizer and stay on top of the pruning and cross your fingers. It's one of those things.
I also suspected the sheep manure because the leaves have been beautifully green.
Yeah.
I figured it must be the extra nitrogen in it.
Could be. So, but Paul had one more thought?
Two more things, I think. That pruning that you are doing, I would bring it a little earlier. Mm-hmm. If your neighbor has a wisteria that's flowering, or if you see one around, then you want to time your pruning to be about 2 weeks after all of those flowers have fallen.
Right. Yeah.
So that you are not pruning off potential flower buds for the next year.
Good point.
And then my other...
Ray is in Toronto, and the Toronto Botanical Gardens has a huge wisteria, so that would be one you could watch.
Mm, okay.
And then it may sound cruel, but I would say instead of stressing it by pruning it, grab a spade. And this is going to sound weird, but stab a spade in the ground, not all the way around it, but disturb the roots.
Yeah.
Stab the spade straight down, cut off some of the roots.
Yeah.
Make this plant think it's going to die,
yeah,
and it will make flowers.
Well, how about that?
You know, I have heard that before.
Yeah, it is. It's a stress thing, and it actually works. Plants, when you stress them to the point of, we get anthropomorphic about this, the plant's not really thinking, but they will often flower when under stress.
Gee, you know what, guys? Sorry, I'm looking at the clock here, and we're
30
in the
seconds
very
left.
Final seconds,
yeah.
So we have to say goodbye
great
to all
question,
of our listeners.
Great question, Ray. We're going to have to get Paul back.
Super guest, Paul. Thank you for coming by.
Yeah. Thank
You're welcome.
You for
thank
so
you
much
for the opportunity.
For starting up the Black Walnut. Now you don't have to text me all the things we didn't say.
Yes.
Okay. And remember, we are a podcast. We can always listen to the show again and say, remember all the things we forgot to say on air. Thanks, Paul. Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Sebastian. Couldn't do it without Sebastian and the great callers. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.